Now, I want to play a very special happy birthday request to Neil McHugh from Falkara. Neil is 94 this week and is a regular listener to the show. Neil, thank you very much indeed. I hope you're keeping well, Neil, and it's great to have you listening to the programme. Hope you had a lovely day yesterday, and who's to say the celebrations won't last all week. But have a lovely day, Neil. Have a lovely day, Neil, from all the family, but especially all of us here at the 9 till noon show. We hope you had a wonderful, wonderful day, Neil, and it's great to have you listening. Happy 18th birthday to Ella McBride in Kerrykeel from Granny and Grandad today. Happy 18th birthday again to you, Ella, in Kerrykeel. Have a lovely day, this time from your mum, dad, Brian, Clara, Aisling and Cahir. Jimmy McGlynn, happy birthday to you from the McMenamins, the McCaffertys and the Fawns. It's great to have you all on board celebrating your birthdays today. Right, last call today for you to nominate someone who you believe is very special to receive a fabulous hamper from Cadbury. We've got one to give away today and one to give away tomorrow to a very special person in your life. And then on Friday, we have a €250 shop local voucher. Right, so we want you to tell us why you would send chocolate secretly to someone special this year. Why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to send a Cadbury Secret Santa bar to? Tell us all about someone in your life who deserves your Secret Santa bar this year, but remember to keep it a secret. And if they're successful, we're going to send them this big, beautiful Cadbury hamper. So call in and text the reason. And to 086 60 25,000, give us your name, address, and tell us who in your life deserves this special surprise and why. I'll read some more examples out before the end of the show. And just to remind you to look out for a poster near you if you want to send a Cadbury Secret Santa bar to someone special. They're popping up all over the country, or you can search Cadbury Secret Santa for more details. Full terms and conditions are available for you at cadbury.ie. Michelle Connaughton is Force of Union official in the Northwest region, which incorporates Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim branches. Michelle, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Right, clerical staff in the HSE are staging a series of lunchtime protests around the country today and tomorrow. They're demanding a halt to a ban on recruitment. But before we talk about the importance of, for the reasons as to why they're protesting, clerical staff is kind of a catch-all phrase. Some might think, oh, well, that's pen pushers or whatever. You know yourself. So I want people to have a true understanding of the work, the important work the clerical staff do in the HSE in the various departments and how it's crucial to the running of the executive.
You're right in that that's the interpretation sometimes of the clerical and admin and the managerial grades that work behind the scenes. We quite often hear about doctors and nurses and the pressures that they're under. But if you even take Letterkenny University Hospital as an example, we've got clerical and admin staff that vary from entry level grade 3 all the way up to management level, and they cover your main switchboard. So if you ring the hospital looking to get through to a ward to talk about a family member or about your appointment or your x-ray, they are all our clerical and admin staff that man those phones and deal with those queries from patients and families across Donegal. And then you've got the ward clerks on the ward that do your letter to your GP when you're being discharged, or your result to a consultant. All of those sorts of things are the admin and clerical background support that go on a daily basis, 24 hours a day, to support the services across the HSE in our acute services and in our community services.
So the vital links in a chain, it's like trying to ride a bicycle with four or five links in that chain missing. It simply wouldn't work. The chain would be just lying on the floor.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there would be a crash of said bicycle.
We'll park my metaphor there, if that's all right, Michelle. What are clerical staff, your union members, what are they actually looking for that has led to this protest?
So we've currently got this moratorium on recruitment that actually started with clerical and admin grades, and you may be aware that actually over recent weeks the HSE have extended that to most grades of staff within the HSE, excluding some doctors and nursing graduates and staff like that. But across all of the grades within the HSE, this moratorium is in place. And the effect of the moratorium is means that when staff leave for whatever reason, be that retirement, maternity leaves, be it promotional opportunities, they are not being replaced at the moment. And this is having a severe effect coming into the winter period on all our services, both in the acute hospitals and in the community. So, and just like one...
Go ahead. No, I want the example, please, Michelle.
Yeah, so I was just going to give you one example in that in Letterkenny University Hospital at the moment, they have 20-plus vacancies of clerical and admin grades. And these are critical posts that involve new service development posts, staff replacements, maternity leave cover. And it has a knock-on effect both on the clinical staff who don't have their admin support as well as admin staff having to carry the work of vacant posts. The hospital switchboard staffing level at the moment is at a critical level. And admin staff across the hospital are being asked to volunteer to cover those shifts to ensure that the switchboard is answered in LUH. So that just gives an example of the pressures that the staff are under at the moment.
And it's part of the problem too that sometimes things are introduced as a temporary measure and then all of a sudden become the norm. Like we can go back years ago where people, say for instance around 2008, 2009, you know, where there was a freeze on pay increases, for an example. We've seen it with solicitors and other and others. And then, you know, 10, 15 years later, those measures are still in place and people have lost out on an absolute fortune and career progression in the meantime. Is there a concern, as well as other concerns as well, that this is sort of trying to introduce a new norm?
We would have a concern. In the HSE, back when the financial crash happened, there was a moratorium in recruitment at that time that lasted the guts of 8 or 10 years without any kind of promotional opportunities for our clerical and admin members during that time. So obviously we would have major concerns for the career progression of our members within the HSE. And also, we're coming out of a COVID crisis. We are having to deal with a backlog from that. And so the HSE are putting all sorts of measures in and dealing with their, pushing forward with Sláinte Care, all of these new service developments that will be really beneficial to patients across the country. But they need to be resourced and staffed properly in order to work.
Yeah. And pardon my ignorance from the outside looking in, but if this is about budgets, for an example, and there's been much conversation about the HSE being underfunded, if there is a supplementary budget, a top-up, a bailout, however you might describe it, then these measures then should be reversed. And if they're not reversed, then it would point to a different motivation. As I say, that's an outside looking in interpretation. Is there any accuracy to that?
I would agree that these measures would need to be reversed if there is some intervention from the Minister and the Department of Health and further funding provided. Our clerical and admin grades and our grades across the HSE are not responsible for the overspend in the HSE.
The low-hanging fruit.
They absolutely are, and it comes back to our very first point in our conversation, in that the clerical and admin staff are very much underestimated and underappreciated in the provision of the services across the HSE.
Mm-hmm. Well, the protest at Letterkenny University Hospital gets underway at 12:45. Whether you realise it or not, you probably have engaged with some of these staff as part of that sort of network at the hospital, so you can go out and support them. Yeah. We'll give them a toot if that's what you're inclined to do, and we'll see where it goes from here. What's next, by the way, after this action, Michelle? This is this only today at Letterkenny, other places tomorrow, and then how do you ramp it up if you aren't successful in your aims?
So we've got these lunchtime protests happening at various sites tomorrow, today and tomorrow. And then our strike committee, that's part of our national health team in Dublin, will actually meet to decide where we go from here. Any of the engagements that we've had through the WRC with the HSE have failed to address our concerns. And even the ask of one person out, so one person leaving, that person being replaced, at the moment is being refused by the HSE. So our strike committee will actually meet after these demonstrations today and tomorrow and decide where we go from here.
All right. Have a lovely day, Michelle. Thanks for your time. Michelle Connaughton, Forza Union official for this region here. Some of your comments here. Greg, I'm not a fan of Conor McGregor because I think the UFC stuff is too violent. What I think he's really responsible for is all these young boys running around wearing suits with jackets that are too small for them. Maybe it wasn't them. Maybe it wasn't him. But I have it in my head that it was him who started this trend. Well, yeah, I think too definitely the checked jackets and stuff. But you know what? Fair play to the young lean lads. If I had the figure for it, I'd probably bag on one of those jackets too. It just simply don't have it anymore. I'm like that. There's a meme goes around of a dog leaning against the wall. Don't Google it. The way politics is going throughout the world, i.e. Trump becoming president, and more recently in the Netherlands, Geert Wilders, who was voted in. So the idea of McGregor heading for the IRS doesn't surprise me, but giddy God, can you imagine if he actually won? Maybe he'd get a surprise. Though people, the one thing I'll say about the presidency and what you'll see a lot of commentators on X says that, well, does he not realise that the presidency is there's no power to it? Well, there actually is quite a lot of power the president has. It's just it's not employed very often. Like, the president's position is reasonably powerful, you know, to scrutinise legislation and what have you. Signing legislation, it can be, there are powers that the president has that can defer that or refer that. So I don't think it's as powerless and ceremonial a position. I think that's what it's been turned into. But the president does have decent powers. And I'm convinced if someone like him, and I was poo-pooed a little bit in this comment, if someone like him comes forward, an anti-establishment vote, be it in a general election or a presidential election, they will do very well because it'll be people that believe in them. It'll be people that don't normally vote but say, right, this is change. And it'll be a protest vote. So if he actually did get the nomination and did run, he would upset the apple cart. I'm not saying he'd win, but trust, he wouldn't get 2 or 3%. Morning, Greg. Sinn Féin aren't as revolutionary or ideological as their rhetoric implies, and the track record instalment reflects this. And although the question is not if Sinn Féin was right in bringing forward the motion of no confidence in the Justice Minister, they are the opposition. They think they have to do this to look good for the people of this country. But truth be told, Sinn Féin is no better than the government of this country. What did they say one time? We're all in this together. And the people know this. Sinn Féin are not the Sinn Féin of yesterday. They are in cahoots with the people who run this country 100%. Hi, Greg. Sinn Féin were right to try and get rid of Helen McEntee. If children being stabbed in broad daylight can't do it, nothing can. There have been three other knife incidents since then. Also, when it comes to Richard Boyd Barrett calling for intifada, that means violence against Jews, like suicide bombs in coffee shops. That's hate speech and anti-Semitic. And I did say it right at the top that that language under whatever the proposed hate speech laws certainly would have one toe in them in any case. Right. I think this we were talking about I can't remember the name of the company, it's just escaped me, about a skin cancer melanoma diagnostic tool, which the HSC has funded and approved, but is not being adopted in the Sialta Hospital region. This caller says, so he wants the government to pay for a private service. On this occasion, I agree with the hospital. It's not the hospital that are against it as such. This is a Sialta situation. But anyway, why would they pay for a private service? It would end the possibility of a public service ever returning. Is this not another private clinic so that they'll take away the public clinic? They're not paying a new doctor to come in. My dad got knee surgery done in Ballykelly. £23,000 is what he paid. Got £17,000 back. They didn't change the currency at that time, and that's why he wasn't fully reimbursed. If you're a medical card, you'll be on a wait. Can I just give you a piece of advice, by the way? If you haven't resolved that situation yet, will you please contact the Ombudsman? and file it with them, make a complaint with them, or make representations to them. Just don't accept it. If it was about they didn't change the currency and your dad's out £6,000, please, at the very least, not that it might do anything, but please raise a case with the Ombudsman. This is something that office is really, really interested in. But reading on here, if you have a medical card, you'll be on the wait list for 3 or 4 years. Private health insurance, and you're seen straight away. My neighbour was on a 3-year waiting list for hospital. She didn't pay because she was waiting for 3 years, and the hospital referred her. She didn't have to pay a penny. Is the Loch Salt Road clear today? Now, it's high up there, and there was a hard frost and ice, so if there is a clearance, it might take longer to clear the Loch Salt Road than others. Anyone been over it today? Is it safe? Let us know. I was told about an hour ago there's a lot of black ice on Grania's Gap, which doesn't sound very pleasant. So drive with care. A lot of black ice on Grania's Gap in Inishowen. Now, I just want to mention too, you're invited to join for a free evening of Christmas carols presented by the Inishowen Gateway Singers and the DCITS Choir. It's a free event, but donations can be made on the night in support of the annual Christmas Day dinner for people on their own. So you can go to this and contribute after a lovely night's entertainment, and you're supporting, it's an annual Christmas Day dinner, which is a beautiful initiative which allows people on their own to come together or to get food on Christmas Day. Well, this event is on Sunday, December 10th, at 6:30 p.m. So that's this coming Sunday. Sixth, okay, I thought that says 8. So it's on December 10th at 6:30 p.m. Church of the Irish Martyrs, Gortley Road, Ballyrain, Letterkenny. Catherine McLoon of the Blue Stack Veterinary Clinic in Ballybuffet is with us this morning. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, you know, it's said every single year that a puppy or a dog's not just for Christmas. And we throw it out there sometimes, but if you think about it, it's not, is it? You know what I mean? Like, it's a big, big, big responsibility. And you're advising parents, caregivers to think strongly about whether or not they can go through with this 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 year, 15 year commitment.
Well, that's it, exactly. I mean, you said it's not just for Christmas. It is a big commitment. A lot of dog breeds tend to live till, like you said, you know, 12, 13. The smaller breeds live a lot longer. And yes, it's Christmas as well, isn't a great time. You know, you're out, you're visiting people, you're partying, you've got lots of guests coming over. It's stressful for the, you know, the new dog, all that sort of thing. You need to be around more. It is a commitment. You need to make sure that you're there. If you get a puppy, to let the puppy out. You know, if you rehome a dog, you've got to be around a lot more. And just think about, it's a big commitment. Think about what you're doing and all that sort of thing.
Well, let's talk about sort of the day-to-day commitment of dog ownership. You know, what a dog requires, what kind of care it needs.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, it all depends on what age of dog as well. So I would never recommend leaving any dog all day. So if you're doing, you know, a 9 to 6, 8 to 6, whatever job, and you're away all day, I don't think, you know, a dog is the right sort of pet for you. You know, you need, not just for toilet breaks for the dog needs socialization. You know, they're sort of a pack animal. They want to be with you. They want to have a bit of contact with you and things like that. If you're having a puppy, if you're getting a puppy, again, they need to be let out every hour, every couple of hours. They need to have a play. They need to have training. All that sort of thing. And then the older dogs, they need the walks. So, you know, they do need to get out, have their sniffs, go to the toilet, you know, have a bit of exercise. And that is very, as well, dependent on the breed that you choose.
And I imagine, too, that's so important to stable behaviour, that energy's burnt off,
course,
that,
yeah,
you know, there is that bit of socialising, things that are normal. Because, you know, we often say, you know, say, for instance, if a dog snaps or bites or something like that there, there's often contributing reasons for that as well, too. You know, I mean, we always blame the dogs. I think, you know, us humans have a role to play as well.
Oh, 100%. 100%. There's always a reason behind everything. And a lot of the working breeds, so your collies, your pointers, your cocker spaniels, you know, they need a job. And whether that's just going for a nice walk and having their sniffs and getting the ball and things, if they don't do that, their mental stimulation, they start finding things, you know, chewing things up, you know, and we get cross with them. But it's because they're not getting enough mental stimulation, not just physical, you know, running about. And like you said, with the snapping and things, there'll be cues in behaviour that has led to that. It won't just be the dog randomly snaps. There'll be cues that we're missing. And yeah, it's a lot of exercise and mental stimulation will help all of that as well.
They used to say that sorry seems to be the hardest word. I think no is often a much harder word as well. And I think too,
I think so.
We kind of talk about the responsibility and the commitment to a dog, but also too, we have to think of a young person, you know, 7 or 10 or 13 or whatever, that the idea of something, and no matter how much they tell you what they might do and how they might care for this animal,
I know.
Quite soon after that, depending on the child, and like dogs, we're all different, right? But, you know, very soon that novelty can wear off, and it is mom, dad, granny and granddad that end up having to pick up the pieces there. Not just the practical stuff, but actually the socialisation, the playing, the walking and stuff, because, you know, young ones can change their minds really quite quickly and move on to the next exciting thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it has to be the adult decision. It has to be, you know, do you want a dog? Not just if your 6 or 7 year old wants the dog. You know, do you want all of the taking it out last thing at night for the toilet, taking it for walks? And like you said, we unfortunately have a lot of people, not a lot, but a few people come into the clinic where their dogs have sort of anxiety. You know, that a lot of COVID puppies, a lot of, you know, people got dogs in lockdown. And then because of the situation, we couldn't socialize them. So it's all about that as well. You know, it's, if the adult is prepared to take on the dog for 10 to 12 you know, years or longer, then that's great. But yes, I'm sure, you know, kids, they move on to the next thing, don't they?
Yeah, for sure. And 2 years from like 11 to 13 is like a blooming lifetime. And also too, you know, each dog has its own personality and it has to fit in as well. So I'd say there's people, you know, you do see sometimes people post, we need to find a home for this dog because it's too lively for us, or it's too, you know what I mean? So the dog brings a personality into a home as well that you have to factor in. It might not be exactly all the bed of roses that you anticipated it might be.
No, exactly. And that was like going back to the breed, you know, looking, doing a bit of research, you know, having a Google, see, asking your vet, for example, what breed do you think would suit? I've got young children. You know, I don't like mud. I don't want a dog. You know, maybe a big Labrador wouldn't be for you then, you know, things like that, you know, asking about the breed. But I mean, a dog is a wonderful pet. I don't want to put people off getting
of
a dog.
Not.
It's just having a good think about it. And also, I mean, we've got so many rescue centres over the county that are inundated with dogs.
Well, they're full though, Catherine. So, I mean, it's up to people what they do individually, but you'd have to sort of morally say that, you know, if you have our dog homes full of dogs, to go and sort of source another one and bring it into the county as well. As I say, I'm not judging people. It's up to people what they do and all. But if you're a real dog lover, would you not sort of look to a rescue dog first? Maybe
exactly.
Not guilting anyone, and I feel bad saying it.
No,
but, you know.
Not at all. No, exactly. I completely understand both sides. But that's, you know, that's what I was saying. You know, we deal a lot with a lot of charities. And I do think they don't like to rehome at this time of year because of the Christmas, you know, getting a dog for Christmas. But definitely chat to the charities. I know there's a big one in Derry that's having to close one of its kennels. So a lot of dogs need rehoming there. So, I mean, have a chat to your local charity and then you can go and meet the dog and see. And there's a lot of dogs that just, you know, unfortunate circumstances. It might be that they're a beautiful, lovely dog, but their owners have had to move out of rented accommodation or something like that. So definitely chat to your local dog charities. And I would definitely go down that route and see. But I understand both sides. If people, you know, the puppy situation, I understand both sides of the story. But,
but the puppy doesn't last long. Is there an argument to sort of saying it's a little bit like, you know, trying to give up cigarettes or lose weight on the 1st of January, to wait a couple of months? So if the big push is on for Christmas, we'll leave that decision to February or April and then see.
Oh, definitely.
See if it's still
want it.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. Or even if you do, because even a couple of months.
Exactly.
Because as well as that too, like even the freedom you might have, you know, in terms of heading away for the day, going on holidays, heading around to visit people. As you say, I don't think either of us are trying to put anyone off, but like you are taking on a real significant responsibility if you like your freedom of movement and stuff.
Mm. I know, 100%. It's, you know, you won't be able to just drop and go, you know, to kill their village for the day. You need to have somebody lined up, either family or a good dog kennels, you know. Just do a bit of research. And like we said, we're not putting anyone off, but we want to try and minimise the dogs that go back into these rescue centres. So we want people to be aware of what they're taking on. And going back to the puppy, yes, a puppy is only a puppy for, you know, a few months, but they're blooming lively, I can tell you. So as long as you're prepared for that as well, we've got a young dog that we rescued, and Christ, it's my other dog is 8, and she's very calm compared to this pup. So I'll tell you, it's yes, it's very different getting a puppy to a mature dog, that's for sure.
Let's see, whilst I have you, and I won't hold you much longer, but a few questions of people who, I'm not saying they're regretting the decisions, but why does my dog pee when it sees new people? Do you know?
Now, it can be one of two things. It can be excitement. So if it's a young dog and it's a really sociable dog, you know, excitement of any form. So, you know, running, jumping up, wagging their tail, like, oh, I'm so excited to see you. They can let out a little bit of wee. And that can be because they're so excited. And that can be just a young dog controlling its bladder.
Look, it can happen to the best of us.
It can also be nervousness. So really try and assess the body's, the dog's body language. So is the dog rushing up to people really excited and having a little dribble of wee? Then I wouldn't be too concerned about that. If the dog is cowering and is, you know, tail in between its legs and then lets out a little bit of wee, that could be more sort of fear, nervousness, submissiveness. You know, if they show their belly, it can be showing to a... If imagine they're a pack situation, that shows I'm at my most vulnerable... and I'm nervous. So just assessing the body language. And then obviously if it's an older dog, you know, maybe think, is there any problem there? Is it incontinent? Is it, you know, so there's a few things. I'd say if it's an excitement thing, it's just, yeah, pure excitement in a young dog.
My dog doesn't like it when I show physical affection to other people, like a hug or a kiss. She barks like crazy. What's this about? Now, if this is a long-term partner, there is quite a strange whole procedure one has to go through to try and acclimatise the dog to the situation, like your partner kissing the dog, for an example, and showing affection to it. But if it's everyone, I'd say this person secretly loves it. But obviously it's not great if you want to hug and kiss other people. But what do you do? The dog barks like crazy. It's jelly.
Yeah, it is exactly. It's just jealous. It could be jealousy. It could be... if the dog is, it depends what breed it is, if it's protective of its owner, it could be, doesn't know that you're hugging. I mean, dogs don't hug. So it might be that they're worried that that person is getting within their person's boundaries and they're a bit concerned. I mean, setting up situations where you've got a friend that's happy with dogs, you know, getting treats. If the dog is like food, positive reinforcement. I'm all about positive reinforcement rather than no and telling them off. It's all about, oh, well done, you didn't bark, here's a treat. You know, just setting up the situations in a calm environment where you can maybe do a little bit of physical touch to someone, so hold their hand or pat them on the back, and then if the dog doesn't bark, go, oh, good boy, and give them a treat. That sort of thing, to gradually build up, rather than in a big crowd, you're hugging everyone, the dog is stressed out of its mind. Well, I think gradually.
Yeah, another caller says, my dog scratches all the doors and floors. They believe it's looking for attention. How do I stop this?
It depends when they're doing it. If they're doing it when you're there and sitting watching telly and they're just doing it, then that's sort of more of a behavioural thing. But if they're doing it when you're not there, it's probably anxiety, you know, being left alone. So if when they all leave the house, the dog is scratching the floor, scratching the doors, it could be, A, like we said before, that it's not mentally stimulated enough, or it's sort of anxious being left on its own. So things you can do is leave the radio on, leave the telly on. You can get lots of these special toys that you can put food in, so these special treat balls or a lick mat where you can put a little bit of the dog's wet food on a mat and they can lick it, just to sort of entertain them. You can even get these clever little puzzle boards for some of the clever collies where they have to push it all around and get the treats out. Just, again, a bit of mental stimulation if you're not there, to make them a bit more happy.
Last one, and not a pleasant note. My dog does terribly smelly wind. How can I stop this? Presumably it's diet related.
Exactly, yeah. A lot of it can be diet related. So dogs can get sort of irritable bowel and things from their food. A lot of the time, if the dog is really happy and is in good form, but has upset tummy, so diarrhea or smelly, you know, wind, then it just look at the food. So sometimes the food we're buying, it might not agree with that dog. So look at changing to maybe a sensitive, or either ask your vet or ask your local pet shop, my dog's, you know, a bit sensitive, can we try a different food or something like that?
Is it, dogs chew grass too, don't they? Is that to aid digestion or is it something else?
Maybe that's yes, I mean, it can be. So no, my dog, she will eat grass in when she's in 100% form. So she loves the long grass.
So they don't self-medicate with it, no? They don't self-medicate with the grass?
I think she's doing that, my dog, for extra fibre. It's not because she wants to be sick, but then some dogs do it to help make them sick. So it's just to, again, gauge, is your dog actually under the weather? Is she poorly? Is she looking to be sick? Or is she out on a walk, happy as Larry, wagging her tail and just munching on a bit of grass here and there? So, yes, it can be both things, really. But,
right, two quickies then. I have a six-month-old Labrador. She chews her bed and blankets. How do I stop that and how? Well, when do I stop it and how?
Unfortunately, Labradors just love to chew things. Again, maybe if she's 6 months old, so she's probably still teething. So maybe getting her things that are suitable to chew. So getting the safe sort of chews in the pet shop, these rubber Kongs that she can't destroy, all those sorts of things. Hopefully she will grow out of it a little bit. But food, Labradors love food. So if she could stuff a treat ball full of food. And when's she doing it? Is she doing it when they're not there? Is she doing it just in general? But yeah, it's probably just a young dog thing that hopefully she'll grow out of.
And very lastly, what does it mean when a dog licks your face?
Dogs lick for lots of different reasons. So it could be that you've got something yummy around your face, you know, ice cream or residues of food. It is a sign of affection as well.
And they're very affectionate to their genitals and stuff as well, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be the second licker.
I won't say what I was going to say. Go on, yeah.
we'll gloss over that.
They're just being affectionate. They're showing their love and exploring you, aren't they? I mean, they're exploring.
Exactly.
I mean, toddlers do. They explore everything with their mouth.
Exactly. They don't have hands and things. That's how they explore things. Exactly.
All right. And on that note, Catherine, thank you so much for your time. Sorry, but I didn't realise we were going to get the questions in, but people wanted to ask and you answered expertly.
No, of course,
thank
anytime.
You so very much indeed,
anytime.
Catherine. Take care.
Anytime.
Bye-bye.
All
Catherine right. McLoone of the Blue Stack Veterinary Clinic in Ballybuffet. Okay. And whilst we were listening to that, we were watching little doggies and puppies playing on the beach and in the grass and... So lovely. Chris Ashmore is not in with us today, but I want to let you know that his guest on Business Matters this week is Kilcar man Barry Doherty, who is Chief Executive Officer of Dunkaneely-based CMB Agri Enterprise Limited. It's a very, very interesting business with considerable potential. The firm uses seaweed and fish extracts to manufacture a natural sustainable product known as biostimulant, which can be used on crops to boost growth and quality. He describes the biostimulant as a multivitamin for crops. The potential market is vast, and earlier this year, as he explained to Chris, a major multinational Japanese company took a stake in the Donegal company, is now engaged in considerable research and development with numerous trials.
In January of this year, we took on an investor into the business, a Japanese conglomerate, really, Mitsui and Co. They're called. They're a big, massive company in Japan. They employ about 44,000 people. You know, 110 billion euro turnover. So they're big players. Now they're in all different markets, but they're also in the nutrition market. And they're really now have been this past 12 months moving our R&D work, you know, from where we could only really afford to do one or two trials per year. At the moment, we would have 37 different trials going on in 17 different countries at the moment on all different plants, from almonds to strawberries to wheat and barley, and then in Japan to all different types of lettuce that they grow over there. So yeah, it's very exciting with them. The results that are coming through are fascinating, and it's shown very encouraging signs for good growth over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
And just to let you know that you can listen to that interview in full right now on our website, highlandradio.com. It's the latest edition of the Business Matters podcast, and it's also going to be played out live for you just after the 6 o'clock news this coming Sunday. Now, I'm sure most of you are aware that on August 9th, 1973, gunmen opened fire from a bridge over the M2 motorway at a van carrying workmen back to Donegal from a building site near Glengormley. 16-year-old Henry Cunningham was sitting in the front of the Bedford van when he was shot. He died soon after. We're joined on the programme by Robert Cunningham and Herbert, who I might speak to first. Herbert is also Henry's brother and was the driver that day. Herbert and Robert, both of you, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Morning, Greg.
Herbert, I might start with you. I mean, you know, your recollections on that day. I mean, we don't have time to go through it now, but I'm sure it's as if it were yesterday for you still.
Exactly, Greg. Exactly. You just read it yesterday. It's 50 years past here on the 9th of August. And it just seemed like it only happened yesterday evening.
That's it. Yeah, Robert, you were listening, and Herbert, you were listening to Micheál Martin's comments this week about the killing of Donegal man Michael Leonard. He was 24 years old when he was shot dead in 1973 by the RUC near the Donegal-Fermanagh border. I suppose, at looking at what Micheál Martin commented on this week, Robert, and then sort of learning from your experiences with the killing of Henry, what was your emotions listening to Micheál Martin?
I was listening to your news yesterday morning. I couldn't believe it. And no disrespect to the family that was involved in the same time as Henry's. But I met Micheál Martin in 2009 up in Dublin. And he hasn't brought our case up, and I've discovered, listening to your thing, he's brought this other case up several times. Now, what's his problem? Why? Henry was only a young fellow, 16, coming from work.
Mm.
And this doesn't go away, you know.
Yeah. Do you feel, Robert, that Henry's been forgotten?
Henry was forgotten. Even when it happened in 1973, we know now that the moderator of the Presbyterian Church and the Irish government knew the next day that who done it. Yet now our mother and father went to their graves, not being told. Why was that happened? Why had that to happen? Why didn't they come forward and say to her, my mother and father, who done it?
And Herbert, you're feeling this too, of course, being there in the day and sharing the same parents, as you can imagine. You have the same emotions as Robert has as it relates to, you know.
Yes, my voice made me greatest because I had a bit of cancer. I spent 10 months in the kidney and my voice box is kind of gone, but you know what I mean, but you'll still hear me.
Loud and clear, but, Herbert, loud and clear.
Yeah, good man. No, that never goes away. No, it's here every day. And really, what really is what I can't, they're not, nobody seems to, like, I know there are a lot of cases, and I'm nothing against that. There's a lot of cases been mentioned, but Henry is forgotten about.
Which is very sad for you.
It is very sad, Greg, honest to God, it is very sad. Like he was working, we were down there 4 or 5 months working. We worked from up in Chantala, the same crowd, McDonald's from Belfast. And the work gone out, and a lot of guys asked to go down to Glengormley, which we normally would never thought anything else. We went to where the work in there, but I think about 5 months. Lovely summer's evening coming up the motorway. The motorway only went down onto below the footbridge, the second flyover at the footbridge at that time.
Yeah.
It then came past when they went down to the bottom, it then changed at that time.
Yeah.
50 years ago. Then you had to go up, turn up the way up the, and they all had to go into Castle Dawson. But we went on to Wienar Road, that we were working there in Glengormley at the time. Every denomination of people was working on. Mm. People was worried about Catholic persons, Church of Ireland, whatever. Nobody bothered about that there. But we were targeted for something. We never got no warnings or anything, Greg. And that's the truth. That is the truth. We walked up and down the wound. In 1969 or 70, was a no-go area.
Mm.
We were beside, as what I called the boys that time, the provost was scratching away every day. Nobody bothered them, and they bothered nobody. And we ended up in Belfast, and that's what happened to us.
Robert, if you could speak to yeah. Micheál Martin now, or any representatives of the government, what would you say to them?
I would say, well, first of all, I'm going to say to you now, I want to thank John McAteer, who first highlighted our case when we started looking about it, when we found out who it was. I also would like to thank Padraig McLaughlin, who was the only politician that came to my house. And I met Martin McGuinness down in the Dáil the day I met Micheál Martin. And Martin McGuinness came over to me and he shook my hand and told me I was a brave man. And he brought the case up with Tony Blair, but that's as far as that went. Mm. And if I met Micheál Martin now, I would be saying to them, the Irish government 50 years ago were cowards. And I say today they're still cowards. And they're certainly not to be trusted.
Okay. Robert Cunningham. Herbert, I spoke to you before, Robert. I think that's my first time speaking to you, Herbert. Hopefully you're on the road to recovery. Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Strong words heard loudly, I'm sure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
bye-bye.
You very
bye-bye.
Much.
Bye-bye. Take care, Robert and Herbert Cunningham there. We had a wonderful, wonderful response to our competition in association with Cadbury. So many of you nominating special people in your lives. It's the kind of competition you don't want to pick winners. Well, you do want to pick winners, but it doesn't feel right because we heard some amazing stories of people and it would warm your heart. And I wish all of you could read all of the stories that we have had. Right, okay, so here is today's winner. I'm just texting in for the competition to win a Cadbury bar of chocolate. Well, it's actually the person that you're nominating is for today and tomorrow is winning a lovely hamper. The person I think deserves this is my granddad Jim. My granddad Jim. He had a rough year with breaking his hip and started to attend dialysis in Letterkenny Hospital 3 times a week. He praises the staff and is so thankful for this service they do for him. Granddad plays a big part in our lives. We're so lucky. If I win, I believe the prize is a hamper. But instead, I'd like if this went to the staff of the dialysis unit in Letterkenny for all the hard work they do for Granda. So the winner of this beautiful hamper today is the staff at the dialysis centre, dialysis unit in Letterkenny. And hopefully they'll keep a few bits side to one side for Granda Jim when he's in. He's in 3 times a week and praises the staff and the service that they provide for him. So we've got a lovely Cadbury hamper and it's a beauty heading down to the dialysis unit in Letterkenny University Hospital as a big thank you for all the hard work they do. And as I say, hopefully they sneak a bit for Granda as well. Okay, listen, thank you, Carl, for sending that in and we'll make that happen. And we're going to have another opportunity for you to win for someone you nominate to win a hamper from Cadbury tomorrow, and then we have a €250 voucher then on Friday. So it's all very exciting, isn't it? But as I say, it would warm the heart reading some of the wonderful stories. We were talking about buying a pet for Christmas or adopting a pet. This is one listener's experience. I have a friend on a farm. They tried to adopt a dog and they were turned away. They were told it wasn't a birthday present. The sister then rang. The husband did too. They were turned down. They had a house and a farm. They couldn't adopt. They had to buy. Lots of paperwork involved. They offered them a hamster instead. What good's a hamster? Ask this lady why it's so hard to adopt a dog. And I have asked other people that in the past and those responsible for rehoming dogs. And they take into account a whole plethora of things. And they have to ensure that where the dog is going, it's good for the dog. I'm sure your place was as well, but for whatever reason, you weren't successful. Being Irish, in my opinion, is a mentality of community work to make life better for us all, not based on colour. The biggest fear is extreme religious views, Islam, that may come into our country and forced upon us by force, by weight of numbers, example, Sharia law. But that is like worrying. I mean, people go, well, climate change isn't real. Nothing's happening there. But they think like, Islam's going to take over Ireland and we're going to live under Sharia law. You know, I mean, is that realistic? Good morning, Greg. Ask your guest what an Irish person would get in South Africa. What are the benefits like? Greg, you portray Irish natives bad and refugees as good. Not at all. I literally having a conversation where I was putting across some of the stuff that you read and hear to have a conversation, putting it to that person. Now, Irish are the best nation in the world. We're the best nation in the world. I'm not saying anything other than that for a second. And we are so generous and we're so welcoming and we're so giving. We're one of the biggest givers. And in Donegal, we're some of the biggest givers. And we are doing our more than our fair share, more than any other county, to host and welcome people. So I'm not suggesting that for a second. It was trying to have a conversation where all the cards were on the table and all viewpoints were covered and responded to. He is incorrect about how to stop the influx. The only way is to close our borders like we should have done a long time ago. Another, nothing to be afraid of. Tell that to the people stabbed last week, the families of the two Irish beheaded in Sligo last year, the family of Ashley Murphy. And I get exactly what you're saying, of course, but I could list off, very unfortunately, and people I know who were brutally, brutally murdered by people here as well. So, listen, I'm not saying you're wrong or right. I'm just saying that it's not like we'd all be perfectly safe. Just go down to the courthouse and see who's landing in there for the various things that are going on as well. It's a mix, I'll tell you that. Plenty of locals. Okay, that's it. We're going to see you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned.